WPR is your source for essential news, compelling conversations, and refreshing music and entertainment. Thanks to the support of more than 50,000 members, including a growing number of monthly sustainers, your support makes WPR possible. Thank you.
By the time the redistricting maps are passed in 2011, Republican Dale Schultz has been in the legislature for nearly 30 years.
I think in my political career, I did over 1,000 parades.
Like generations of Wisconsin lawmakers before him, he's seen the pendulum of power swing. In the Senate, where he spent most of his career, he's seen control flip back and forth 7 times.
And he's been through 3 cycles of redistricting. The last two were under divided government.
And so there was a check and a balance. Either we had a governor of the opposite party or one house or both houses of the legislature, you know, were different from the executive branch. And that forced some compromises.
But in 2011, things are different. As you'll remember from our last episode, Republicans run the show. And by run the show, we mean they control the governor's office, the Senate, and the Assembly.
And this lets them control the entire redistricting process. And when GOP leaders and their lawyers set up shop at a private law firm across the street from the Capitol, Dale Schultz is one of the rank-and-file Republican lawmakers who visits to look at the new boundaries of his district.
Dale Schultz signs the confidentiality agreement and votes for the map. And at the time, he doesn't think much about it. Until the next election.
And we know in our hearts that for the United States of America, the best is yet to come.
In November of 2012, Barack Obama wins a second term in the White House. In Wisconsin, it's not one of those super close elections that seems so common here. It's decisive. Obama beats Republican Mitt Romney by more than 200,000 votes.
This spills over to races down the ballot, too. Statewide, Democrats receive more than half of the votes across all assembly races.
You know, it was pretty much of a Democratic landslide. We got wiped out. And then somebody said to me, well, don't worry. We're still in control of the assembly. I said, how can that be? I said,
despite receiving fewer than 50% of the total votes, Republicans win 60 out of 99 seats in the Wisconsin Assembly. And they preserve their majority in the Senate, too.
Schultz, who has spent decades in politics, says he can't figure it out. The math doesn't add up. In such a Democratic year, he expects Democrats to win in the legislature, too.
And it was at that point that the light switch went on, and I realized what a mousetrap had been built.
Schultz realizes it's the map. Republicans had drawn legislative district lines that protected them, even when Democrats performed better.
Schultz and the state of Wisconsin have now seen the 2011 map in action.
From WPR Reports, I'm Bridget Bowden.
And I'm Sean Johnson. This is Mapped Out. The map that Schultz saw in action was the result of countless decisions by mapmakers. Where to draw a line? What shape to make a district? They got to make those calls.
So, what do these decisions look like? To find out, let's go on a tour of Wisconsin to places that changed after the 2011 map.
Let's start with DeForest, a village in Dane County.
DeForest is about a half hour north of Madison, where lots of its residents work. Some big highways are nearby. You see lots of new houses here because it's growing fast.
And the village has built lots of new stuff to make it a nice place to live. There's a new downtown park shelter, a splash pad, and a trail along the Ahara River.
Before 2011, it was represented by one representative and one senator. After the new map, it got a little more complicated.
Can you tell us where we're standing right now?
We are on Yahara Street, which is the northern part of DeForest, and it is actually a boundary line between two different assembly districts and two different Senate districts.
DeForest, a village of around 10,000 people, was sliced up under the new map. One of the dividing lines went right in front of Abby Lowry's house.
One day, Lowry hears about a bill being pushed at the state capitol. It would have allowed for the sale of water utilities to private companies. And this was right after the Flint, Michigan water crisis.
And so that kind of sent alarm bells off in my head. I had two little kids at the time. I think they were like 4 and 1. And I was very concerned about that. I didn't really hear anybody in town really talking about it much. And
Lowry wants to do something about this. So she makes a bunch of flyers to hand out to her neighbors. She wants them to contact their elected officials.
But there's a problem. Because she lives on a line, some of her neighbors have different representatives.
And then I start going door to door, and I had the map out on my phone, and I realized it wasn't even the whole street that was divided in half.
Because DeForest wasn't just split in two. It was split into 3 assembly districts and 3 Senate districts. That's 6 different lawmakers representing this one village. In the world of redistricting, this is often referred to as cracking.
There are so many district lines that it can even be confusing for people who live there.
So I point to this corner. Which district is this?
Assembly District 42, Senate District 14.
Okay, and across the street over here,
Assembly District 37, Senate District 13.
How about that corner over there?
you're challenging me. Okay.
Now, Lowry is on the village board, and contacting lawmakers is part of her job.
I know the last time that we sent a letter to our legislators, we commented like, we got to do all 6 of them. Make sure we get it to all 6.
Now, you might hear this and think, 6 lawmakers for one village. 6 people working for you. Not bad, right?
But Lowry says it's not like that at all. She says they don't show up for stuff like parades or public meetings because those lawmakers consider other communities home.
I strongly feel if we were all in one district, like one assembly district, one Senate district, I think that person would show up. I don't know how they could.
Because DeForest is such a small part of each of their districts, Lowry says it's like an afterthought. Instead of more power, DeForest has less.
Okay, so that's DeForest, a community that was cracked into 6 legislative districts.
2.5 hours northwest of DeForest is Eau Claire. And what happened there is kind of the opposite. It's a strategy known as packing.
So Eau Claire is much bigger than DeForest. It has about 70,000 people, too many for a single assembly district. It has to be divided up somehow.
The way they used to do it before 2011 pretty much split the city into north and south. In the north, you had one assembly district and one Senate district. And in the south, you had the same.
All of these districts included some parts of the city and some rural areas. They were a mix.
This made a lot of sense to Eau Claire resident Wendy Sue Johnson.
Eau Claire is a 2 high school town. It's a 2 zip code town. It has 2 rivers going through it. That makes it very clear when you're on one side of town versus the other.
And so Johnson describes herself as a lifelong Northsider, and she's had a lot of jobs here. High school social studies teacher, lawyer, even dance coach. She's also pretty political. She was on the school board, and she once ran as a Democrat for the state assembly.
She says before 2011, assembly and Senate races in the area used to be really competitive.
It used to be that we had competitive districts in this area, and it would swing with the mood of the electorate, right? So if there's a nationwide, Democratic wave or a nationwide Republican wave, it usually would play out in western Wisconsin. And that has not happened since 2010.
And the numbers bear that out. The 4 districts that used to represent Eau Claire were amazingly close. You'd have a Democrat win by less than 1% one year, and then a couple years later, a Republican would win by less than 1%.
Both assembly seats and both Senate seats were up for grabs almost every election. Those candidates had to fight for each and every vote.
In 2011, Republican mapmakers changed that. They drew one assembly district that pretty much only included the city of Eau Claire.
And if you look at it on a map, it looks kind of like a bullseye. One small urban district surrounded by much bigger rural districts.
So the urban district, it's very Democratic. Republicans really can't win there.
And those rural districts that surround the city, Democrats don't really have a chance in those.
Wendy Sue Johnson found this out in 2018 when she ran for the assembly. She knew she faced long odds, but she wanted to give people a choice in the election.
And in 2018, a year that saw Wisconsin elect Democrats for governor, U.S. Senate, and every other statewide office, Wendy Sue Johnson lost her race badly, by about 15%.
Johnson had seen enough. She said she would never run for office in this district again.
Not under the gerrymandered maps, no. You're spending almost a year of your time knocking doors and making phone calls and talking to the public, you know, every spare moment. If we have different maps, possibly.
So before the new map, Eau Claire was perhaps the most competitive area of Wisconsin. It could swing back and forth any given election and swing control of the legislature.
But under the new map, people like Johnson say it's not even worth running. These races are predetermined. We finish our tour in Wisconsin's biggest city, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is one of the most complicated parts of the map, and that's in part because so many people live here.
Including Helen Harris. She lives on the northwest side of the city in a house that she and her husband built.
And from the very beginning, it has been a mixture of white, black, Asian, Hispanic, and it's a very interesting and friendly kind of neighborhood to live in.
Before the 2011 map, all the legislative districts in this area looked different from each other. They were all sorts of shapes and sizes.
But after Republicans redrew the map in 2011, they created a bunch of districts that stretched from the edge of Milwaukee west into the city's suburbs.
The Republican-dominated suburbs. So some of these Milwaukee Democrats, like Helen Harris, suddenly found themselves with very conservative representatives who did not call Milwaukee home.
So we were kind of chopped off and added to a heavily Republican district that stretched out throughout the city and a couple of other counties.
A couple of these districts are competitive, but not Helen Harris's. In the last election, the Republican candidate won unopposed.
It's not just about political party, though. Harris feels like her new representatives have been constantly at odds with the city she's proud to live in.
There also seems to be a lot of distrust in some Republican districts about the city, and a lot of hatred of Milwaukee and Milwaukee Public Schools. And I was an employee of Milwaukee Public Schools. I went to Milwaukee Public Schools. My children went to Milwaukee Public Schools. And I currently have two grandchildren in Milwaukee Public Schools.
Harris is the kind of person who writes letters to her legislators. She likes to have a relationship with them. She at least wants them to give her the time of day.
But Harris and her new district are worlds apart. At the end of the day, she says she feels like she doesn't have a voice anymore.
Because my vote doesn't count. My vote doesn't count because of the way the legislators deliberately set these guidelines for redistricting.
Now, these district lines need to go somewhere. Helen Harris lives just a few blocks away from a Democratic district with a representative who shares her views. Someone is always going to be on the edge of that line.
But if you step back for a minute and you look at the whole map, you can see a pattern. These things happening in DeForest, Eau Claire, and Milwaukee. In the big picture, they all benefit the same party, the Republicans.
And the Democrats, they saw the writing on the wall, and they sued.
More on that after the break.
Sometimes politics can make your head swim, so let the WPR Politics Podcast be your floaty. We'll haul you out of the deep end with all the latest in Wisconsin state politics so you can decide what's interesting and important. Join me, John K. Wilson, along with WPR Capital reporter Laurel White and Sean Johnson, you know, the guy from this podcast, for new episodes almost every single week. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at WPR.org/politics.
When we said Democrats could see this Republican advantage coming, we're talking about before the map was even drawn.
They literally file a lawsuit about a month before a new map is even introduced in the legislature. It goes to a three-judge panel because that's how federal redistricting cases work.
Their argument is pretty basic. The population has changed. The old map is out of date. And if the legislature and governor don't draw a new map soon, a federal court should step in and do it for them.
A Madison lawyer named Doug Poland signs on. At the time, he's working for a big firm doing commercial litigation. He's hired because he knows his way around a courtroom, but he's not an expert in redistricting.
I had never handled any kind of a political or election law case in my life. I don't think I could have even told you what redistricting was, even in a very general way.
He gets brought up to speed fast, and once the map is introduced, the original lawsuit snowballs.
They claim that the new map violates the Voting Rights Act.
That it disenfranchises hundreds of thousands of people.
That it violates those traditional redistricting criteria. You know, compact, communities of interest, local boundaries.
And the lawsuit claims that the map is a partisan gerrymander, that Republicans drew it with politics in mind, silencing the voices of Democratic voters.
Even before this case makes it to trial, it's clear these judges are mad.
Because the secretive tactics Republicans and their lawyers use to draw these maps spill over to this courtroom. They initially refuse to turn over certain documents.
But the judges aren't having it. They issue a scathing order.
No, really, it is harsh.
They call out the Republican lawyers by name and accuse them of disinformation, foot-dragging, and obfuscation.
Also, sandbagging and hide-the-ball trial tactics.
And they accuse the legislature and its attorneys of, quote, giving every appearance of flailing wildly in a desperate attempt to hide the redistricting process from the public.
And Poland says this kind of talk from federal judges is
highly unusual. The fact that lawyers are called out by name several times by a three-judge federal panel. Highly significant. Very unusual.
But even though the judges are mad, in the end, they only make one tiny change to the map, moving a single district line in a Latino neighborhood of Milwaukee.
The court decides that the map does not violate traditional redistricting criteria. So even though the judges had major issues with the way things were handled, they basically uphold the map.
Poland says that's the nature of redistricting law.
So there were a number of things that were done that were really troublesome, and we raised those. And the court said, we're troubled by them too, but we don't think that they rise to the level of a legal violation.
And the partisan gerrymandering claim that Democrats started to bring in this case, they just drop it. Because in the world of federal court, partisan gerrymandering lawsuits never go anywhere.
And then we were sort of done in the trial court, because that's the way things work.
Democrats had basically lost this battle, but there was another fight they were gearing up for.
We've said several times during this podcast that Republicans were running everything when the maps were drawn. And those maps helped them cement their power in the state legislature for the next decade.
However, there was a very brief moment when that wasn't the case.
In 2011, after Republicans overhaul Wisconsin's union laws, Democrats want them out. They organize a massive recall campaign against Governor Scott Walker. It's viewed as the Super Bowl of elections.
And then?
Tonight we tell Wisconsin, we tell our country, and we tell people all across the globe that voters really do want leaders who stand up and make the tough decisions.
On June 5th, 2012, Walker wins big.
It's the peak of his political career, but it's crushing for Democrats. Mark Miller remembers it vividly.
Wow, yeah, well, I remember being discouraged about the fact that we not only lost the governor's recall, but that we lost it fairly significantly. It was not a close call.
At this point in 2012, Miller is the Senate minority leader, the Senate's top Democrat.
Miller has been living this recall fight, but with a different focus. That's because there have been more than a dozen attempted state Senate recalls over the past couple years. Four of them are held on the same day as Scott Walker's big win.
Of those four races, three are Republican blowouts.
And it looked like that was going to be the case for all of the legislative recalls as well.
But Democrats still have a shot in the fourth race because these recall elections are being held under the old legislative map, the one drawn in 2002 by a federal court.
And under that map, the Senate seat in Racine is the definition of a swing district. It's very competitive.
That night, Democrat John Lehman ekes out a victory by 819 votes. And that win gives Democrats a one-seat majority in the state Senate.
And Mark Miller suddenly finds himself the Senate's majority leader. And those private lawyers who helped Republicans draw the map, now they work for him.
We asked them for all their files on the redistricting. All the memos, all the texts, all the emails that had been transpired between leadership and others.
Miller takes all of those redistricting documents and posts every page of them online. He says he was trying to expose what he thought was a secretive process.
It was a real treasure trove of information, but then you had to know what to look for.
And you know who knew what to look for? One of the Democratic redistricting lawyers, Doug Poland.
In this trove of redistricting information that's now online for the world to see, Poland notices some stuff he's never seen before. Stuff that should have been turned over during the redistricting lawsuit.
And now I'm looking at dozens of documents that haven't been produced. Now I knew something was wrong.
So even though the redistricting trial is over and the map is mostly upheld, Poland notifies those federal judges who were so frustrated with Republicans.
And those judges have seen enough. They order Republicans to turn over the actual computers that were used to draw the maps so the Democrats can investigate them.
What they find leads them all the way to the United States Supreme Court. More on that next week on Mapped Out. Mapped Out is reported by Sean Johnson
and Bridget Bowden. We're produced by Brad Kohlberg. Edited by Noah Ovshinsky, music by Carl Christensen, additional support from Adam Friedrich.
Digital editing by John K. Wilson, and digital direction by David Hyland.
Photography by Angela Major, artwork by John Nichols.
You can see more at wpr.org/mappedout.